Hey, good afternoon. This is the Unnamed Movie Podcast. This is the more or less prequel episode. I'm here with Simon Brown, and this is me, Andrew Robinson from
Good evening, good evening.
Yeah. We're going to have our debut episode later in the week on Saturday night coming up. But right now we feel like, you know, since it's the end of 2008, we want to get this off our chest, our top 10 movies of 2008. And what I want to ask you first, Simon, is there anything you should let us know before we get into the list, like movies that just didn't make it because you haven't seen
Well, the only thing I would say is, after going through the movie list, as I was looking over all the movies that came out this year, I realized there's a lot of movies that I missed myself that I wish that I could have watched. But hey, you know, I still had to make my list. I still watched a lot more than 10 movies, so I was able to pick a top 10. So if the listeners happen to have a movie that they're thinking, God, how comes that didn't hit your list? It may either be A, I didn't get time to watch it, or B, didn't want to watch it because I didn't know it was going to be great. So that's that.
Is there anything in particular that you think might have made your list if you'd have seen it that just didn't, that you didn't get around to or whatever?
Oh, Benjamin Button.
Yeah, that's definitely off
my list. That definitely would hit my list.
I haven't been able to see that one yet either. That's it, because I can think of a few, like, everyone nowadays is talking about Mickey
Rourke's
The Wrestler.
I'm sure. Speak.
The Wrestler, that's one of the movies that didn't make my list because I just haven't seen it yet, as well as Doubt, the new Meryl Streep movie, and Synecdoche. I don't know how to pronounce this one. It's the movie directed by Charlie Kaufman with Philip Seymour Hoffman. Those are like the three top movies on off of the...
Oh, I heard about that.
That I think I'd love to watch and would probably make my list, you know, but I just haven't gotten around to it.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, sometimes we just have to work with what we have, you know?
All right, so I'll let you kick this off with your number 10.
Well, my number 10, I had a few choices that I wanted for number 10, but then I settled for one that was very simple and one movie that I just simply enjoyed, which was Kung Fu Panda. I don't know if you guys will find that really funny or if some people didn't like it, but Kung Fu Panda definitely was on my list.
Okay, like, I remember when I saw Kung Fu Panda, I took my little brother to watch it because I didn't think it would be anything. You know, DreamWorks, Jack Black as a panda, I thought it would be utter trash, but I can tell you it was one of the most surprising movies I've watched this year. It got me to realize that even when you have crap actors or people you just don't believe in, when the animation, the story, everything works together, it just works and it brings out a movie. And the only reason that would even come close to my list is the surprise factor, more or less, than the movie itself.
Right, and you see, what I also realized or made me really like the movies, I went with my brother and his friends, my little brother who is 11, and it just made me realize that, you know, I missed this, you know? It was an experience that I haven't had in a long time, and sitting with the kids made it very important. So that's why I put it on my, as number 10.
Oh, okay. All right, so your number 10 was Kung Fu Panda, and I'm going to just skip over to my number 10. And I've got to say, The Go-Getter. I don't know if you've seen this movie, but it's a nice indie movie I caught up with. It had a DVD release out in October, and it was just awesome. I mean, I've recently become a huge fan of Zooey Deschanel movies. Even if the actual movie itself isn't that good, I end up loving Zooey Deschanel in it. And this movie is definitely one of those which I love, and love Zooey Deschanel even more for it. It's about this youngster who goes and steals a car, and he goes on a road trip across America to find his brother, and the person's car who he steals is Zooey Deschanel, and she's talking to him on the phone all throughout this road trip, and it's just so interesting to see the relationship as it goes along and the conversations. It's one of my favorite movies of 2008, and I kind of hope more people would give it some credit.
Yeah, I think the issue with indie films right now, and I would say this personally, is the following for indie films seems to be a little bit exclusive, if you get what I'm saying. Like, I feel like the people who watch indie films only talk to other people who watch indie films. You know, I don't know if that's a bad interpretation, it may be flawed, but it's just that I personally don't get exposed to indie films a lot. Other than when I talk to you, and you know, if it wasn't for you, then, you know, I don't know if that's because it's an indie film, it doesn't get a lot of commercial recognition, or people don't recognize as much, but I like indie films, and I want more indie films to come to the forefront.
Yeah, it's something I've been clamoring for. You know, people need to get out of the box of watching just the Hollywood blockbusters. They need to see some of those smaller films where they try to capture relationships and conversations with people that no one really talks about. It's something that I want people to see, which is why I try to talk about them as much as I can. I mean, recently I haven't. I've been bogging myself down with the 2008 catch-up that I've been doing for the past 2 weeks. So it's a movie that I highly recommend to anyone. If you have a chance, go by your DVD shop, go by the rental, you know, go check out The Go-Getter.
Alright. Is it my turn, number 9?
Yeah, go on, man.
Alright, number 9 was Be Kind Rewind. Right? Now, I'm trying not to spoil any of the movies, you know, and do the best that I can. But Be Kind Rewind for me was a refreshing movie. It's simple as, I don't know if you saw that movie, did you?
Yeah, I saw it.
What did you think of it?
I thought it was a huge disappointment.
Really?
Really?
Exactly.
I'm a huge Michel Gondry fan. I mean, I loved Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind and Science of Sleep, but that movie, it just tried too hard to take what he does well, which is the minimalistic directing and some interesting, really interesting shots. Like, for example, in The Science of Sleep, you have those dream sequences, especially in the beginning.
Yes. And you know, like the clay figures and
all of those things are so amazing to watch, and they're so imaginative. But then when it comes to Be Kind Rewind, he tries to plant that imagination into little snippets of a movie that just doesn't work.
Right. I remember when I was exposed to Eternal Sunshine for the Spotless Mind, and I had a friend of mine in college who let me watch Science of Sleep, so I really got into Gondry a lot. And as I mentioned before, I personally, you know, just liked how I liked how it felt watching Be Kind Rewind. I liked watching them remake the movies. You know, I liked seeing Mos Def, and I liked seeing Jack Black in his own element, but a little bit different. And for me, it was refreshing because it was just a movie where I simply just did not know what was going to happen. I didn't know. All I could do was feel the emotional things that they were going through and laugh at all of the sequences. And it was just, you know, for me, a comfortable movie.
Well, I mean, I'm gonna have to tell you flat out, no, that movie just wasted my time. I even thought, like, at the end, you know, you'd have a little clip after the credits saying like, oh, we got back our shop, that's how we did it. But this movie, I just felt like Michel Gondry, as I said, he just tried too hard to make it in a more orthodox film world, where what I want him to do is keep doing what he did in The Science of Sleep and in Eternal Sunshine, where it's completely different and it's more interesting that way.
Alright. On to your number 9.
Alright, my number 9 here, we've got a movie that's been talked about a lot around the podcasts that I listen to. It's Slumdog Millionaire.
I heard a lot about that movie.
Yes, I heard a lot about it too, so I had to go and watch it. It's about this slumdog, a child from the slums who comes up and he goes on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire in India. And he gets to the final question, which is 20 million rupees, but they break the show right then and there, so he doesn't answer the last question. And as he gets out, he gets hauled off and he's being questioned as to how the hell he got so far, because they're asking, how can this petty child, you know, who has had no education, basically no anything, just life, be able to get there when nuclear physicists can't do it? And the movie is a great movie, but I mean, I feel at the same time that people hyped it up a little too much. Like it wasn't the best movie of the year. It wasn't the movie that I needed to see today. You know, it just kept me wondering why everyone's raving about it. And the only thing that really kept me going, not only was the directing, but the storytelling in it, because they go through the entire show of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire with each question and answer, and they show you how he knew the answer in that it was a part of his life.
Okay, interesting. It's something that someone has told me to watch, and you know, I'm really interested in watching it at some point.
Were you like me, who used to love to watch Who Wants to Be a Millionaire when it used to be on TV?
Some at first when it first came out, but then after a while it just got pretty monotonous.
Well, I mean, most game shows are, so it's generally gonna get like that. But I guess it's always the personal stories that interest me the most, which is why this movie had to get on the top 10.
Cool.
So,
all right.
Number 8.
Oh, my number 8 now, right?
Hold on, right now. I think we want to introduce this one with a little clip from the film.
Yeah, you do that.
So, here we go.
Coming up.
What's up there?
The view.
The view of what? The view down here? I can see that from down here.
Ray, you're about the worst tourist in the whole world.
Ken, I grew up in Dublin. I love Dublin. If I'd grown up on a farm and was retarded, Bruges might impress me. But I didn't, so it doesn't.
Okay.
And that was a clip from your number 8 movie in Bruges.
Yep. There, you see, a movie like this, it's just awesome. There's not much else I need to say about it other than it's awesome. It's hilarious. Colin Farrell is just in a character I've never seen him before. It's not his, you know, it's away from his Sucky Bullseye character in Daredevil, you know. So when I first saw this movie, I couldn't do anything but laugh. It was just such dark comedy. It was so funny to me, and I just had to put it in my top 10.
No, well, I love this movie as well. It's actually in my top 10, but a tad bit higher. It made me realize that I can like Colin Farrell. It made me realize that actors really can be shitty and awesome at the same time. And what I love the most, especially when it comes to Colin Farrell, is when you listen to his dialogue, the inflections that go up and down as he's speaking, yeah, throughout every line. It's just perfect. And what I love even more is how Brendan Gleeson, the other hitman that's with him on this trip in Bruges, just compliments him so well. You know, it's just plain amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I really loved how he spoke, and I also loved the villain. And there's a time where he was running, like he was running away, and they're like stuck in the air. He's like telling the guy who was trying to kill him, "You run that way, I run this way." And I just found that really entertaining, just the chemistry and the way that they spoke to each other.
Yeah, it definitely was. It is definitely one of those movies that I recommend everyone watch, because just like The Go-Getter, it's a slightly lower budget film than everything else you'll see on this list, more or less. And it's just so great at what it does, in that the dialogue is still brilliant. They still get the story along, they still get set pieces going well. And movies like this need to be watched. They need to be seen. And I get so annoyed when these movies just get skipped over by Carib. It aggravates me.
True.
So now, right, my number 8 comes,
yep,
to a bit of surprise, but he is a director who directed one of your top 10 movies ever when we spoke about those earlier this year.
Okay.
Here it is, the clip from this movie, which I love so much.
Okay. Okay, don't tell me. Don't tell me. Let me guess. I made a disgusting spectacle of myself, right?
Right.
And everything that man said is true, right? Is that what you're gonna say?
Apparently I don't have to. You're saying it for me.
Well, you're wrong, April.
Really? Why am I wrong?
Because the man is insane! He's fucking insane! Do you know what the definition of insanity is?
No! Do you?
Yes, it's the inability to relate to another human being. It's the inability to love.
That is a clip from my number 8 movie, Revolutionary Road, directed by Sam Mendes and starring Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet.
Right, another movie that I really want to see that I haven't seen yet.
It's an amazing film about a marriage. These people who live in the suburbs, Revolutionary Road, and just don't fit the bill, you know? During the 50s, you know, it's one of those things that people fall into, and I just love that movie. It brought a tear to my eye nearing the end.
Well, the only thing I can say is that I really think that Leonardo DiCaprio has proved himself as an actor in so many different ways, from Departed, you know, movies like Departed. And I really wanted to see this movie when I saw it. And Sam Mendes himself, I mean, I just rewatched American Beauty 2 days ago. Still blew my mind.
You know, I still say that man just captures the suburbs so well.
I think so. He puts, and then when he doesn't, not only does he capture the suburbs so well, he speaks about issues in the suburbs that people tend to want to, you know, blow over. You find a lot of people when they make movies about, you know, things in the ghetto, how bad it is, blah, 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 but we don't see all the bad stuff in the suburbs. Suburbs isn't as pretty as it looks on the roads, and he does it so well.
All right. And I think what really got to me with that movie is the fact that I saw the movie, and if you watch the trailer, you think that it's just a regular couple in the suburbs, but it really isn't about that. It's about what's happening to that couple at this present moment, which is something really interesting, and how the suburbs reacts to it. I don't want to really give it away for anyone who hasn't seen it, especially you, but it's definitely something where you need to go in with a very clear mind.
Yeah. Alright.
Alright, so send
me again
to you with number 7.
Alright, number 7 for me is The Incredible Hulk. Now, looking back on the list, I feel like In Bruges should have been higher than this one, but I'm going to leave it at 7 because I enjoyed The Incredible Hulk. I think Incredible Hulk came out in the wrong year. meaning it came out in the year of Dark Knight. But I think if it had come out in a separate year or during a separate time, it would have gotten a lot more recognition and a lot more respect. They took another comic movie, they made it this wasn't about being realistic. It was about taking a franchise and making something good out of it. And I think they did a good job.
Yeah, I love that movie, but it didn't make my list. And I mean, I actually own the DVD. I still haven't listened to it with the commentary, which everyone says is amazing. But one thing that I realized about The Incredible Hulk when I got to rewatch it on the DVD was how much better it is than Iron Man.
Maybe I need to rewatch it. I only saw them.
It's a better movie when it comes to actually playing the story correctly, and especially when it comes to the development of the evil guy. In this case, for Incredible Hulk, it's the Abomination, while in Iron Man they just turn on the switch and you get an evil guy, which I found so annoying when I was rewatching the movie.
Good point.
All right, so we're moving along right here. I've got the new Pixar film as my number 7, Wall-E.
That was on my almost list.
It was on your almost list? I mean, I love this
movie. It was between Kung Fu Panda and Wall-E.
Oh, Wall-E wins the fight every time whenever I think about it. I mean, I've stopped. Like, I used to champion this movie to people, telling them they have to see it, but I stopped. It's not fair for me to shove this one down their throats, because I can understand the arguments for people who don't like it, because it is a bit preachy in what it's saying. It is a bit simple. There's no dialogue for 50 minutes, you know? It's rough for someone who just doesn't love movies to love this movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And what made me love this movie so much was that the simplicity in it, the fact that they can tell a coherent love story without having a word of dialogue for the first 50 minutes of the movie.
Well, they did have one word.
Well, you know, we leave that alone. And they had two. There was Eva. So we got a script going.
True.
I mean, I kind of want to be the person who sits behind Andrew Stanton while he's shouting at people in how to change the design of the garbage box. Sorry. And I think this is a movie that will be in people's top tens ever in another 20 years when they look back on this and see how it may have revolutionized animation. Right.
I feel like this movie kind of gives me that kind of E.T. feel.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking when I was watching trailers for it.
Yeah. I mean, it also has to do with the fact that the Wall-E is kind of... it takes on the anatomy kind of E.T. The big head, the big beady eyes, the small body, or the fat body.
Okay, alright. Now, moving right along, because we want to get to the top five really soon. I'm just going to play this clip from your number six, right? This is...
Sure, go ahead.
This is Cloverfield.
She's crazy about you, bro. Like, right now.
Yeah.
As you
and
are.
And you're in love with her.
But you gotta go after
it's
her.
It's not that simple.
No, it is that simple.
Come on, man. Don't be scared.
It's about moments, man. That's all that matters. You gotta learn to say, forget the world and hang on to the people that you care about the most.
Oh, God. Oh, my God. What the hell was that? That scared the shit out of me.
Did you know that? It's like an earthquake.
You guys. What was that?
Hey, you alright?
Oh, yeah, that was really scary.
I know. Hey, Marlena. Marlena, are you okay?
Guys, look at me.
Turn on the TV. Turn on the TV.
There's like a bomb. Here we go.
Shh.
Quiet down. Here we go. All right.
But now, just approximately 15 minutes after word of a possible earthquake in Lower Manhattan, nearby in New York Harbor, we're getting word of an oil tanker capsizing in the middle of the harbor near the Statue of Liberty.
All right. So I'm now on my number six, Cloverfield.
Yeah.
Did you get to see the movie?
Yeah, I love that movie. Like a lot of your list, I can tell you right now, would probably be in mine if What's in Mine didn't exist.
Well, let me tell you, it's like this. Cloverfield for me, I felt was so good because it had me in so much suspense. I usually don't like scary movies, or I've grown to not like scary movies, right? But this one had been so much suspense that, like, I found myself looking, like, across the screen, trying to look around things because of the view that it had with the video cam. You know, because everything was done from the video cam. And when I saw, when I was watching it, I just kept thinking, what is it? What the hell is it? Let me see it. I need to see it. What's going on?
You know, see, and that's what I think is the best thing about that movie, because it doesn't glorify the villain, the alien or what it is. It doesn't make it into one big thing that you're running away from. It's just that you're a regular person in this town and you're running the fuck away because you're scared.
And not only, and then I think what was also cool is that there are certain little things, right, that made me realize how realistic they would make something. So, like, you know, they're the point in the tunnel where you can't see something, and then as soon as they hit the night vision, it was like, oh shit, run.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite moments in the
and
movie.
Then I think at some point, like, you see the camera lowering and, like, it falls, and then it, you know, it And in a split second, it cuts to him fixing the camera screen.
Yeah. Hey, did you go and see Quarantine?
No, I did not.
Because it was basically, it was a remake of a Spanish movie called Rec, which used the same idea of, you know, the handy cam walking around.
Oh, okay.
I went and saw it. And first of all, I'm not going to say it's good or bad, because I really think I shouldn't say anything about it, because I had such a bad movie watching experience when I went to see it. Because, you know, when you go to the theater in Jamaica, you're going to have people talking. There's no fucking way you can ignore it, right? However, there were approximately like 6 people around me talking. And I mean, they weren't like right behind me, a group of 6. It was one to the left, one in front, one behind, one to the... And I just wanted to strangle the woman behind me who was talking at every point. And when I thought about strangling her, I looked behind and I saw this big dude beside her, and I was like, it's not worth it. Really isn't worth it. And you know, it's just something that annoys me to tears, and that's how I felt about Quarantine. But I think even if that didn't happen, Cloverfield would still be so much better than Quarantine. And I kind of want to go back and watch Wreck. I still haven't seen Wreck, so that's something I want to see.
Do you think Quarantine is better than Cloverfield?
No, I think Cloverfield is hands down better.
Mm.
But that is an awesome movie, Cloverfield. J.J. Abrams just did it well, and I think that movie is the only reason why I'm somewhat looking forward to Star Trek next year.
Star Trek actually looks good.
Well, I think the trailer looks
horrible. And I'm a Star Wars fan. The trailer looks good.
I've never really liked Star Trek, but I'm doing it because I like J.J. Abrams.
Okay.
I just have to shut up and watch it
sometimes. And Siler's in there.
Yeah, I see that. Anyways, I'm going to move on to my number 6, and here's a clip from that movie. See if you guys can figure it out before I do.
Don't you get it?
No, I'm a cock with a mouse or something. I don't know.
I put my story in your limp-wrist hands, and you are not going to fail me. You think I was just blowing my own bagpipe in that meeting? You must put those boys in the shit.
I don't understand.
You want to make your movie or not?
Yes, I'd like to.
All right, you get some of those little videotape cameras. We take them up there and we put them in the trees in different angles. Then you give me and that pyromaniac, Cody, all the smoke bombs, charges, explosives, detonators you got. Then we take those boys up there. Me and Cody, we could light up that fucking jungle so those lily dick actors would be shitting their pants and screaming for their mammies. They'd be begging for a body bag if it means a ride home.
That was Nick Nolte as Sergeant Fourleaf in my number 6 movie of the year, Tropic Thunder.
That is number 3 on my list.
I actually just ordered the director's cut, the unrated director's cut for that movie, because I heard Robert Downey Jr. does a commentary track on it as Kirk Lazarus.
Yeah, I really liked that movie a whole lot, and it's higher up on my list.
Yeah,
you know, so we can skip that when it reaches my list.
Yeah, we can just kind of say it and move on. Tropic Thunder is one of my favorite comedies of the year. It gave me a feeling that Ben Stiller actually is funny. I've always trashed Ben Stiller all his career. Like, I've hated that dude. I went to see The Heartbreak Kid. That movie was such shit. I went to see...
It was horrible.
Yeah. I went to see... I saw Zoolander, and that movie hurts my soul. Even though at moments I will laugh at the ridiculousness, like Will Ferrell as the designer. That's kind of funny.
Okay.
But this movie just killed me. And if you don't know by now, I think you should. Friggin' Tom Cruise as Les Grossman just made this movie amazing. I actually went to see it twice in theaters.
Yeah, you went to see Tropic Thunder twice in theaters?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. Well, I saw it once, and I thought it was hilarious. I think really what sold that movie for me was Jack Black.
Yeah, he is so amazing in that movie. I mean, especially
Jack Black sold it for me.
Yes, he is. He when he does the tree scene, when he's tied to the tree, that's just perfect.
Okay. Alright, what number was that for you, 6?
Yeah, that's number 6.
Well, I guess it's kind of fitting that we go to number 5 now, my number 5 at least. Because we're now, it is, my number 5 is Pineapple Express.
Oh, really? I love
did
that.
Did that make your top 10?
It didn't make my top 10. It's not even in my mentions, you know, I have a little mentions here, but Pineapple Express really, it was funny, and I think the biggest thing about that movie was James Franco, but it couldn't make it for me.
You see, I can understand why some people wouldn't find that movie funny, but for me personally, I think what happened was I had the mindset that some people didn't find it funny, and I just couldn't stop laughing at certain little things, and it was James Franco that sold it for me. But I liked his teamwork with Seth Rogen, and I just thought it was hilarious. There were just certain little things that was just hilarious. But the ending was a little weak for me.
Yeah, the ending really killed me, especially when it came to Danny McBride's character. I almost said Danny Boyle. He was the friend who got into the fight with the Dustbuster.
Right. Right. Yeah, I understand. And I thought they tried to overdo it at some point in the end.
Yeah,
personally.
They really did.
Alright. We can move on from that now.
Okay. My number 5 is actually In Bruges, so we're really going to skip over this because we went through it already. But as I said earlier, one of the comedies that made me realize that Colin Farrell can be a good actor. That's all I'm really going to allow us to say since we went through that already. On to your number 4.
Oh, wait. What did you have number 5? In Bruges?
In Bruges.
Right. My number 4 is Iron Man.
And wow.
I know you disagree with Iron Man being so high up. But I think other than the ending, I really enjoyed everything about Iron Man. I liked how it looked. I liked Robert Downey Jr. And I liked Iron Man as a superhero.
Like, I mean, I was going crazy with that movie. And I think what really killed it was that Robert Downey Jr. was amazing. And the only thing I have to say bad about that movie is that it shouldn't have been called Iron Man. It really should have been called Tony Stark.
Oh, Tony Stark? Okay. I figured you were going to say that. Which makes sense. It's an important point where it's not about Iron Man as a hero at all. It was really about Tony Stark's story. Which would have actually worked because then part 2 could have been called Iron Man.
Well, yeah.
Know that he's already Iron Man, you know?
Yeah, I'm sure part 2 will be better, and that's usually the case with superhero movies. Okay, we're back. Sorry for the problems with the live broadcast, but that happens on occasion. And I'm just gonna kick it back here with my number 4 movie of the year, and this is Gus Van Sant's Milk, starring Sean Penn as Harvey Milk, the first openly gay man to be elected to office in America, in San Francisco.
Okay, I heard about this movie also, and I didn't see it. What did you think of it? I mean, obviously it's high up in the list. Why did you think it was so
this
good?
Movie is just plain awesome. Like I'm a big fan of the Film Spotting podcast, and they're huge fans of Gus Van Sant, and I like Gus Van Sant. I mean, he did one of my favorite Matt Damon movies, which is Good Will Hunting, and earlier this year he did Paranoid Park, which I think is a good movie, but I just think I was out of the loop for some reason and it didn't get to me, but Milk definitely did. Sean Penn is definitely one of the best actors we have today. I mean, I don't care what anyone wants to say about him.
Yes.
You know, I mean, especially with the Tropic
I think
Thunder
he really
thing going on, you know, with
I think he really shot up later on too.
Yeah, and
meaning
yeah.
I thought that at first people didn't recognize him as much. But I think Mystic River also was a really good movie for him.
Yeah, and
for Sean Penn, that is.
Yeah, and he's also a great director because, I mean, one of my favorite movies from last year is Into the Wild, which he directed. And
yes,
well, you also mentioned Mystic River, which I think he directed. And he is a great...
No, that was Clint Eastwood.
That was Clint Eastwood? Oh, whoops. Yeah, but Sean Penn, definitely one of the best actors out there today, especially when it comes to doing characters which are out of the norm. You know, he did... here he does Harvey Milk, which is the openly gay man, and you never at any point watching him play Harvey Milk worry that, oh my god, this is just way too gay for me. No, it isn't. You know, I mean, we come from a country which is highly homophobic, and I personally believe, yes, you know, everyone should have their own choice, and I have no problem with homosexuals. I have a couple of friends who are homosexuals. I mean, but you never worry about what he has done with the character. I mean, I know I've never met Harvey Milk in person, because if anyone knows the history books, and I don't really consider this a spoiler, because on top of everything else, it's told to you in the first 2 minutes of the movie, he dies, right? He's assassinated. Okay. He was living in a world which just feels a lot like how it is today in Jamaica, where people of that society, the homosexual society, have to live in fear of everyone else coming after them. And this man just decided he's not going to live in fear. He's going to go for office. He's going to become a successful individual in society and try to help out everyone in his community, including the gay and the not gay community. And I just love that about this movie. And also, just before, I'm sorry, just before we spoke a second ago about Pineapple Express and James Franco, he's also in this movie, and he's also pretty awesome.
Well, that makes me feel good, because I feel like James Franco has risen since the Spider-Man movie. What I think is really good about Sean Penn, and I was watching a few of his old movies, like even Mystic River, I was watching the other day, and even simple things like I Am Sam, he's really good at bringing out emotions. You know, like his facial expressions and in his acting is very emotional sometimes, you know, and I really like that about him as an actor.
That's Sean Penn. Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah.
I went back to Sean Penn, sorry.
Yeah, and like James Franco, I have to say, before this year I wrote him off completely. I mean, Spider-Man, the Flyboy movie, I mean, he was utterly atrocious in all this, but Pineapple Express and Milk, it's just an amazing year for James Franco. I think that if it weren't for the amazingness that Heath Ledger was in The Dark Knight, he could possibly be a contender for a Best Supporting Actor award somewhere.
True. All right. Well, my number three, we already spoke about.
Yeah, that's...
which was Tropic Thunder.
Tropic Thunder. Why was this up so high for you? I mean, I definitely think it's one of the best comedies of the year, but Jack Black just got to you.
Jack Black just got me that well. I think it just was punch after punch. You know, just... I'm laughing at Robert Downey Jr. as a black man. I'm laughing at the black man. I'm laughing at ridiculousness. I'm laughing at Tom Cruise's character, and then I laugh even harder when I realize it's Tom Cruise. You know?
Did you not know it was Tom Cruise?
It was just funny. Let me tell you, when I was watching it, I did, but for some reason his name wasn't popping in my head. I was just like, I know this voice, I know this face. He's ridiculous. I mean, by when I say realize, I'm talking like a 5 minute gap.
Okay.
You know, like I'm looking at this guy for 5 minutes. I didn't know Tom Cruise was in the movie, in the lineup at all. And then when I see it, I'm just like, oh my god, this is hilarious. And then Jack Black's coked out or heroin addict fat comedian is just, I mean, it's just hilarious. It's just so funny. You know, like as we mentioned earlier, when he's tied to that tree, it's awesome. You know?
I have to say, when it comes to like Tom Cruise in that movie, he was definitely like the thing that pushed it over the bar from just being a good comedy to being an extraordinarily awesome comedy.
Yes.
But I think my favorite part, you know, being able to watch it in the theater with people. I mean, I knew it was Tom Cruise from the get-go. I knew he was this character because I read all these movie sites, and a couple of them spoil it on occasion, but not too horribly. I didn't feel bad about it or anything, but I felt when I was watching it that even if I didn't know, I would have figured it out immediately, because I know all these actors, how they look, how they sound, all this stuff. I know it so well by now, and he was pretty recognizable to me. But then what I loved was when it got to the end credits, and not just what happens during the end credits, which I think is hilarious, but when they put Tom Cruise's name there and tell everyone it's Tom Cruise, and I hear everyone around me being so shocked and awed by the fact that they didn't figure it out that it was Tom Cruise.
So they took a little longer, I guess.
Yes, I was just amazed at how people who just don't know what the hell is going on didn't figure it out, and you really couldn't find out. So it made me feel like the movie was so much better than I really thought it was, and I end up loving it more, because as I said, I watched it twice. You know, I just ordered the DVD, which I hope to get soon. You know, it's great.
Cool. All right. Your number three?
My number three. Now, all right. I have to explain a little bit here, because when people try to say their top 10, right, you can easily look back through their records, especially for me. You can look back through my reviews for most of these movies that I've reviewed, and you'll see that this one I gave a perfect 10 out of 10, right? And the thing about it is when I tried to make up my top 10 and I tried to find movies that would make it, I just couldn't give this movie number one. It was awesome and I love it. I own the DVD. I've watched it 5 times already. It has the best performance of the year possibly, but I just couldn't give it the number one. And I'm going to introduce it with this short clip. Please listen.
So, dead? That's 500.
How about alive? You want to know how I got these scars? My father was a drinker and a fiend. And one night, he goes off crazier than usual. Mommy gets the kitchen knife to defend herself. He doesn't like that. Not one bit. So, me watching, he takes the knife to her, laughing while he does it. He turns to me and he says, "Why so serious?" He comes at me with the knife. "Why so serious?" He sticks the blade in my mouth. "Let's put a smile on that face." And why so serious?
That, if you didn't know, I don't want to talk to you ever again in my life, was Heath Ledger as the Joker in my number 3 movie of the year, The Dark Knight.
Number 3? Okay, number 2 maybe. Number 3? Oh man. I feel like we should skip this and come back to it later. Because I feel like I want to hear your top 2 rather than I want to hear you talk about this. I can't believe this.
Anyways. I think it's easier to call whatever what my top 3 are as ties than they really are different standings, because the movies each in their own right stand out, and The Dark Knight does by itself. Everyone's raved about it. Everyone had reason to rave about it. If you look back in my review, I raved about it, and even my experience to go and watch the movie, I raved about it. You know, I even stole pizza boxes. You saw I put pictures up of that from the people at the theater. And the movie just kicked ass.
But you just didn't feel comfortable saying.
I just didn't feel comfortable saying this movie is number one, because in the end, when I argue in another 2 months in February's time that The Dark Knight should not win the Oscar for the best movie of the year, people are going to come back to me and say, "Didn't you say The Dark Knight was number one?"
Well, I haven't seen Benjamin Button yet, and that is by one of my favorite directors, and I feel like that might take it, but I did make my disclaimer at the beginning saying that I didn't see a lot of movies. So maybe your top 2 I have not seen.
Seen my top 2. I'm almost sure.
Wow. Well, I don't know, man.
So
hey, it's your top 10, not mine, so I can't get too upset.
We're going to leave the mini Dark Knight discussion for later on, because I'm almost sure, by the way you responded, that it's your number one. But let's leave that there, and let's hand it back to your number 2 while you're still pissed off at me.
My number 2, Burn After Reading.
Hold on here.
Did you have a clip for that one?
Yeah, hold on, I have it right here.
Uh-huh, hang on. This is some heavy shit.
Is that my date list?
No, fuck.
You know, I'm trying to reinvent myself in these procedures, which are so incredibly not cheap. What is that?
I can't believe this. This is like intelligent shit.
I'm not comfortable with this.
This is like...
What is it?
Like... I can't believe this shit I'm seeing.
Manolo found it.
On the floor there.
Yeah, Manolo found like this CD just lying in a locker. Locker floor, ladies' locker.
Just lying there.
I'm like, what, someone's music or what? And I come in here and it's these files, man.
I'm not comfortable with this.
Talking about SIGINT and signals and shit. And signals means code, you know?
He was just lying there.
Talking here about department heads and their names and shit. And then there's these other files that are just like numbers arrayed. Numbers and dates and numbers and numbers and dates and numbers and... I think that's the shit, man. The raw intelligence.
Burn after reading.
Are you a Coen Brothers fan?
Yes, I am. But I'm not a Coen Brothers fanatic.
What's your favorite Coen
Brothers
movie?
I still think Big Lebowski is just okay. My favorite Coen Brothers is No Country for Old Men.
Okay, at least.
But I do like Fargo.
I was a converted Coen Brothers.
And
fan.
I do like Oh Brother Where Art Thou. You were a what?
I'm a converted Coen Brothers fan. I used to hate them, and I think it came from the fact that my first Coen Brothers movie was The Big Lebowski, which was so overhyped for me. And when I saw it, I complained bitterly at how useless the movie was. But after repeat viewings of that movie, I've come to realize what is good about that movie, and I love it for it, right? I love it for the ridiculous characters. I love it for the dude being the dude and never turning that off, you know? And that's what I think this movie really is for me. It's a movie that I hate because of its uselessness, but after a couple of viewings, maybe I might turn around to it, but I just can't get behind it.
You see, for me personally, like with Coen Brothers himself, I love their consistency, right? They always give you something. A few more I need to watch, you know, just to pretty much, like, I haven't seen Hudsucker Proxy yet. I haven't seen, was that directed by them or just written?
Yeah, it was directed by them, and it is one of the best Coen Brothers movies. It is the best comedy.
And I haven't seen it yet, but I've seen Fargo. I've seen The Big Lebowski, Oh Brother Where Art Thou, and No Country for Old Men. And I feel like that is enough to have an opinion on Coen's Brothers.
Okay.
You know, but as I said, I like them. I'm not a fanatic. I'm a fan of them, but this movie makes number two just for its sheer awesomeness. It's just different. The way the scenes are cut back and forth, the way the story is told, the ridiculousness of how things happen. And I think also a lot of times when, in a lot of different movies, sometimes when you think that something ridiculous is happening in a movie, there's like a character or somebody in the movie that is speaking about how ridiculous it is, which I find very hilarious. And sometimes commenting on the ridiculousness of it. And to me, that's what makes it a Coen Brother movie.
I mean, I actually rewatched that movie today because, as I said, I feel like it's a movie that if I watch it enough times, I will get to like it. Which is what The Big Lebowski was for me. I watched it again and I felt the same exact way, mm-hmm. that these useless characters just couldn't get to me. I mean, I think a lot of the actors were awesome. Frances McDormand was great. Brad Pitt was awesome. Richard Jenkins was awesome.
He's my third favorite actor, by the way, Brad Pitt. I think second, though. I think he moved up to second.
Yeah. The Brad Pitt character is just amazing.
Malkovich?
Yeah, John Malkovich. I mean,
Clooney.
Malkovich. I love both of them, Malkovich and Clooney, but Malkovich more. I mean, the last time he was in a role that I thought he was this good in was Rounders, as the Russian. His character's name was KGB. And he is just playing amazing in that movie.
Okay. Alright.
I think another good thing about Burn After Reading was J.K. Simmons' little cameo role.
Yes, he's awesome. I feel like he has a way of entertaining, and it feels like, I feel like his entertain, the way he speaks, is so funny, but that might be just how he speaks.
Kind of like the story of my thoughts with Seth Rogen.
Alright.
So my number two.
Do you want to speak more on Burn After Reading, or you want to go to your number two?
I think I'll just let people hate me more if I speak more about that movie. But my number two movie is actually a documentary, which I saw. It's called Dear Zachary, A Story About a Father for His Son. It's the story of this guy, Andrew, who was killed by his girlfriend, and they found out that his girlfriend was pregnant with his child, and his best friend decided to make a documentary about Andrew's life for the son, so that the son would have something to know who his father is. And I don't want to give away any more about the movie, because when I watched this movie, I wanted to cry. It is such an amazing documentary film. It made me realize that all these movies that we talk about, you know, Revolutionary Road, In Bruges, Pineapple Express, all these movies are really thrown out the window when you realize that there's actually real stories out there which are more compelling than them.
Interesting.
Have you actually ever heard of There's Actually...
I mean, I've never heard of it. This is the first time actually hearing about it.
I heard about it.
No, I feel like I need to watch it.
I actually don't think I would have seen it if it wasn't for the fact that a couple weeks ago they showed it on MSNBC, and it was just amazing to watch. Even though I did get annoyed watching it on television, where every time I got into the mood, into the movie, they had an ad and I wanted to throw my television out the window.
Okay.
There's not much more I can really say on that movie without spoiling everything.
How about you go into your number one?
Okay, so my number one movie of the year is Let the Right One In. And I don't know if you know about this movie, but it's a Swedish vampire movie. And my first comment I have to say is I've always said vampire movies should always be foreign. Have you ever heard about this movie?
Always be what?
Be foreign, as in never English speaking. It sounds so wrong for some reason. A little tick I have that, like, vampires shouldn't be English, you know? Have you ever heard of this movie?
Okay, no, I have not seen this movie.
It's by director Thomas Alfredson. A Swedish vampire film about these two children, and the vampire is the child. Baby girl. It's not a baby, it's a girl. And she meets this boy who they get into a relationship together, and it's about the love relationship between them. And the movie is so aspiringly awesome. The one moment in the movie when you have a proper action moment, it's so well deserved, and it's so reserved in that it's not trying to become a Michael Bay film. It keeps within its own reality of vampires. And at every moment when they have a choice to try and go along the line of the regular vampire movie, where they have to explain that she can't come inside if you don't invite her in, they give you an explanation as to why that is, as to what happens if they decide to go against that rule. And there are even some amazing shots in that movie that keep me going, that I can't wait to have it in my collection. I don't know how more to praise this movie without giving it all up.
Well, the most I can say is I'll consider watching it, but I'm very anti-vampire movie.
Hey.
I'm very anti-werewolf and all of that.
Have you seen this TV show that was on HBO recently, True Blood?
I've heard about it, but I'm so anti-vampires into that too, I just say meh and look past it.
Well, you need to check out Let the Right One In when you can.
Alright, I'll consider it.
Now, on to your number
one. Now, for the last movie, are you?
The year.
Yes, yes. My number one, surprise, Dark Knight. And I don't know, I guess I get what you're saying. You know, there's a lot of movies I didn't get to see. So, giving this the best movie, you know, it's rough. I think what I will try to do is try to at least watch the Golden Globe nominations, and when Oscars come around, those nominations for best film, so that I can scream and say they were wrong when they don't give Dark Knight, or be happy that they did, or maybe I will change my mind. But currently, based on what I have seen, I just think Dark Knight is 10 out of 10. I think it's superb. Heath Ledger was great, the action scenes were awesome, and it leaves me wanting more. I watched it 3 times in the theaters, and each time I went with a different person, and the last 2 times I spent most of the time watching the crowd, seeing their reactions and smiling.
I actually went to see The Dark Knight twice in theaters, and the second time I saw it was when I made the decision never to go to Palace Cineplex again, because I got into a huge argument with the manager about something, but leave that alone. This movie is plain amazing. as I said before, Heath Ledger. Hopefully he'll win Best Supporting Actor. I think the score is the best score of the year. If you haven't, you should probably get the score and listen to it. It's amazing. Especially the
opening
I
downloaded it to have it on my iPod.
It's it's the Why So Serious.
It's track. Awesome.
It's just brilliant. I think it should win the Oscar for Best Score.
I think it's awesome. I like Harvey Dent also.
Yeah, I mean Aaron Eckhart was a huge
on
thing
the
in that movie. Oh the soundtrack. But what do you think?
Yeah,
of
I'm
Aaron
talking on
Eckhart?
The soundtrack because I have the soundtrack.
Okay. What do you think of Aaron Eckhart as Two-Face? Because I heard some people complain that he was good as Harvey Dent, because it suits him as an actor that he usually does in movies, rather than Two-Face, where he was just screaming at the top of his lungs for no reason.
I think in the long run, you see, I liked Aaron Eckhart. I thought he was good, based on the fact that okay, yes, he was better as Harvey Dent than he was Two-Face. But that felt more realistic than having someone who was good as Two-Face rather than someone who wasn't great political. Because then what it does is it kind of, for example, if you want to seriously portray a politician who turns into a bad guy, it's best to get someone who is the good politician. You know, that way when that person is portraying the bad guy, you kind of feel more of the politician in it.
Alright, so yep. I must say on repeat viewings, Aaron Eckhart as Harvey Dent was just as good as him as Two-Face, because it really is that guy who became frustrated with life and went crazy because he lost his true love. He lost his personal stature in the world because he was taken in by this terrorist.
That is true. So yeah, I mean, I've said most of what I think about that movie is great. I did think that Maggie Gyllenhaal was a good actress, but I did think that she was not as pretty as Katie Holmes in their role.
Are you talking about like literally pretty or
literally pretty? Which isn't really that important, but I guess the reason why it bugged me is because I feel like when you're replacing someone in the same character, you try to get them to look as much as the other person as possible.
Just like how...
But it was...
Just like how Don Cheadle is replacing Terrence Howard for Iron Man 2.
That bothers me a little bit. I mean, doesn't it bother you?
Not at all. I jumped up in with applause.
I mean, looks-wise. I mean, obviously Don Cheadle, much better actor. But I actually don't think Terrence Howard is a horrible actor.
No, I don't think he's a terrible actor. I just think that he did what he was told to do, but the reasons why he was taken off of the movie was for the reasons anyone else would be fired from a job, that he was an annoying little prick and the director didn't want to work with him, apparently. That's what I've been reading into all of these talks about things, especially when they say that Terrence Howard was the first actor signed on to Iron Man, therefore got the highest paying job on the movie. And then
wow.
Favreau was basically writing his character out of the second movie because he was annoyed by him that much. So I'm jumping up for joy.
Well,
because
the movie turns out to be good.
I'm jumping up for joy because if that's what it takes to get the movie good, then please, by all means, kick him out. And that's the same thing I have to say about Maggie Gyllenhaal and Katie Holmes. First of all, I'm sure it wasn't the same case, you know? I'm sure Katie Holmes was given the option to come back and she decided not to. And then they got Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yeah, and I mean...
But I think
Mad Money was a great
was
success,
awesome in
wasn't
the
it?
What? What'd you say?
The movie that Katie Holmes chose to do instead, Mad Money, well, was a great success. I mean, best decision of her life.
Well, you know, I mean, she has Tom Cruise to hold her up in
loads of sarcasm.
She has Tom Cruise to keep her going in the day, you know? She doesn't need to make money anymore.
Oh, just a side note. I was watching an episode of Family Guy on TV, and there's one where Katie Holmes is telling Tom Cruise she loves her, and there's a power cut, and then an anklet drops off of her foot, and then she hits him in the head with her baby, runs outside and tells a bunch of males that are in bikini underwears that they're free and they can now run away and escape. And every time I see Tom Cruise or Katie Holmes, I think of that Family Guy episode. Because I probably do believe he has her under a spell. Or has her on some kind of mechanical protection. Anyways,
when it comes back to the Maggie movie, Gyllenhaal versus,
Dark Knight was great.
Yeah, Dark Knight was awesome. But when you're talking about Maggie Gyllenhaal versus Katie Holmes, I'll take Maggie Gyllenhaal any day of the week. I loved her in that movie.
True, true. I'm trying to think of any other little thing about the movie that I loved. I mean, the magic trick. The magic trick.
My little brother was begging me to buy him this t-shirt with the magic trick written on it. I didn't get it for him though.
Magic trick was awesome. That moment was one of the single coolest, most shocking moments in an action movie I've ever seen. It's the one thing that for someone who's never seen the movie will never predict.
Definitely.
When in the movie, when he's wrapping that string around the truck, you're like, oh, maybe the truck's gonna flip up or it's gonna explode or something. You did not see that coming with the magic trick.
Okay.
You know, and I don't even care how possible that actually is. You know,
what you mean, the magic trick
cleanly
or
it was done, but
the
it was
truck
off.
Flipping.
Yes.
Which one?
Making the pencil disappear.
Oh, I'm sure that's entirely possible if, like, you know, you get him right on the eye, you know. But, you know, that's enough about the top 10. We've basically said our piece, but I just want to end it off with any honorable mentions you have that you just didn't make the cut.
Well, I personally liked Body of Lies, but I feel like it was unfair to put that in a top 10 because I had a feeling that not a lot of people liked that movie. I just had a personal attraction to it, you know? Forgetting Sarah Marshall I thought was hilarious when I watched it in theaters. You know, I feel like without putting that on the list, I would have to see it again. Wall-E is another honorable mention. That's all I can think of right now.
I have a few honorable mentions. Off like you said, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, that was definitely almost in the cut to go head-to-head with The Go-Getter.
Oh, Step Brothers.
Oh yeah, I love that movie, but that's not here for an honorable mention. I think that's more of a guilty pleasure, honestly. I mean, Adam McKay comedies Will Ferrell is always great, but just, I didn't think about that one. I have a couple more here. I have the documentary Man on Wire. Everyone has been talking about it. It's a story of Philippe Petit. He did a illegal high wire stunt where he went across the two towers in the 70s, I think it was. And they did a documentary about it.
Really?
It was awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of those. So.
And also Australia, I thought was an awesome movie. I mean, a lot of people cut it down for size because it is a bit ridiculous. And the director, Baz Luhrmann, wanted it to be this serious take on the Lost Generation. But if you forget about that and you watch it as a fun movie, I loved it. I thought it was one of the better movies of the year. And also JCVD, the coming back of Jean-Claude Van Damme, and Gran Turismo.
Was it good?
It was awesome. I mean, especially for me, there was one scene where Jean-Claude does a monologue and it's just great to hear him talk from his perspective of how people see him as an action actor trying to be part of his family and things. I mean, I don't take it for 100% honesty from him and how his life is, but you can definitely see something in there. And also Gran Torino, the what should be swan song for Clint Eastwood as an actor.
Okay. I hear that one should be good. I mean, I kind of like Clint Eastwood as a director. Did he direct that one?
Yes, he did.
Yes, I kind of like that.
And one thing I should say, it All right. would have been high up in my list, but at the last moment I disqualified it because I'm sure people would argue with me about whether it was a 2008 or it was a 2007 movie, was There Will Be Blood.
Ooh. Oh, man. But that's 2007, though.
Well, you see, I kind of argue it because...
And it did get...
It got a limited release in the States in 2007, but I didn't see it until like February this year. So I wasn't sure where to really put it. I think it would definitely get up there with Milk
movie
and the Dark Knight.
Blew my mind away.
You know? When it comes to There Will Be Blood, I wasn't sure because I saw it around February this year, but it got a limited release in the States in like December or something. and it's just tough for me to call it a 2007 movie when it really feels like a 2008 for me. But I took it off just so, you know, people could get a couple extra movies. But I think it would be, if I had put it in the list, it would be up there for, like, with The Dark Knight and Milk and all of those movies, because it was an amazing film for me.
The Road of Blood is awesome. All right.
All right, so okay. We're just going to close this off here. So
that's that.
Yeah, this is Andrew Robinson and Simon Brown from gmanreviews.com.
Simo B.
Make sure to listen in later this week, Saturday night, when we will debut the unnamed movie podcast on Ustream on our channel. So listen up, and I hope you like the episode. And make sure, if you have anything you'd like to, any feedback or anything, you can get us at unnamed@gmanreviews.com. Thank you, and good night. But anyways, I'm going to just cut the broadcast here now, because you have an emergency and you have to do that. We'll finish recording.
We could still run through for 5 minutes.
No, it's okay. We'll just cut now, and we'll finish recording later. And then this will be released on my site, gmanreviews.com, for download sometime this week. So sorry to all the guys in the broadcast. This was a very unfortunate emergency that had to happen, so...
All right,
later.
So we will finish it up, and the people who are online that want to hear the rest of it, you can just go to the website, and then
gmanreviews.com. Later in the week it will be up, probably tomorrow if I'm good enough with the editing. All right.
Oh, and I will be having some time to do Addicted to the Tube, and I will be doing Lost, Twin Peaks, which is an old series, and I plan to try and get in at least 2 seasons of Lost before Lost starts back at the end of the month.
All right, you go on, Simon.